Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app. Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app. To give you a taste of what to expect, here's my episode about first chapter mistakes new fantasy writers make. Enjoy. In this video, I'm going to be sharing 6 common first chapter mistakes that I often see new fantasy writers make. And if you can avoid these mistakes, you have a much better chance of hooking readers and getting them to read your entire book. And I know these mistakes are common because I see them all the time when writers apply for my story coaching program. And these are also mistakes that I've had to identify and overcome in my own writing as well. Mistake number 1 is sloppy prose. When I asked you guys what makes you stop reading a fantasy book in chapter 1, the most liked comment had to do with sloppy proofreading. I often think of prose as the outfit that your story is dressed in. If your story is dressed in a really dirty, scrappy outfit, then it doesn't actually matter how good the content is going to be because readers are going to be turned off by that first impression. It's kind of like a job interview. You could be the best candidate, but if you have spinach in your teeth and your clothes stink and you've got all mud on your shoes and you're dragging it through the office, you're probably not going to get that job. So, how do you actually improve your prose? First of all, I think it's important to realize that there are 2 perfectly valid approaches. Approach number 1 is the window pane method, where the goal of your prose is to just be as clear and as unobstructive as possible to really give readers this nice, transparent, immediate connection into the world of your story. A great example of this is 1984 by George Orwell. Listen carefully to this opening scene. It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13. Winston Smith, his chin nuzzled into his breast in an effort to escape the vile wind, slipped quickly through the glass doors of Victory Mansions, though not quickly enough to prevent a swirl of gritty dust from entering along with him. The hallway smelled of boiled cabbage and old rag mats. At one end of it, a colored poster, too large for indoor display, had been tacked to the wall. It depicted simply an enormous face, more than a meter wide, the face of a man about 45, with a heavy black mustache and ruggedly handsome features. What you probably realize there is that the prose is really plain, but it didn't stop us from being immersed in the story because what it was describing was actually quite evocative and interesting in its own right. So that's window pane prose. The second approach is the stained glass window approach. And with this method, here your prose, your window into the story, is something that is a little bit more beautiful, something that is a little bit more lush, a little bit more purple, and the prose becomes more of an object of veneration and appreciation and attention in its own regard. Take the following example from The Great Gatsby. We walked through a high hallway into a bright rosy-colored space, fragilely bound into the house by French windows at either end. The windows were ajar and gleaming white against the fresh grass outside that seemed to grow a little way into the house. A breeze flew through the room, blew curtains in at one end and out the other like pale flags, twisting them up towards the frosted wedding cake of the ceiling, and then rippled over the wine-colored rug, making a shadow on it, as wind does on the sea. So whether you choose to have your prose operate as a plain window or as a stained glass window, both approaches can be effective as long as you have a mastery and an understanding of the basic rules of grammar and punctuation and sentence flow and everything else that goes into creating good prose. As long as you avoid sloppiness, spelling mistakes, poor grammar, and other mistakes with your prose. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you the obvious stuff about checking your story for typos because hopefully you're already doing that. Hopefully you already know this. But chances are there might be some things that you don't know about grammar and prose. And I know that because these errors come up even amongst otherwise skilled and relatively experienced writers who are applying for my story coaching program. So here are 3 somewhat kind of little known prose mistakes that I often see writers make. And if you can eliminate these, you're going to be very far ahead of the crowd. Number 1, sentence splices. This occurs when you join 2 independent clauses with a comma rather than a conjunction, and it results in a mushy, somewhat run-on feeling. So for example,
He surveyed the castle carefully. It didn't seem that well defended. You can see how that comma in the middle is creating a sentence splice. It's sort of leading to this mushiness and this weird transition between the two ideas in this sentence, and it feels sloppy, it feels amateurish. We need to change that by either having a full stop or a conjunction. So, for example, you could change that to the following. He surveyed the castle carefully. It didn't seem that well defended. Or, he surveyed the castle carefully, but it didn't seem that well defended. Getting rid of sentence splices will make your writing crisper and better defined. Number two is the wall of text. Particularly in the first chapter of your fantasy novel, you're really showing readers how difficult this book is going to be for them to read. And if they open the very first page of your fantasy book and it's just one massive big block of paragraph and there's no dialogue to break things up, there's no paragraph spacing to create that white space on the page, it's going to feel very intimidating to readers, and it might be an indicator that your book is a slog and they might decide not to pursue it. On the other hand, if you are able to insert liberal amounts of white space within your pages by using dialogue to break up big chunks of text, and also being more liberal with your paragraph spacing as well, there's this subconscious thing that goes on in a reader's mind when they see more white space on a page. They think, okay, this is not going to be a really big slog for me to get through. It's going to move a lot faster. And there is a real kind of physical reason for this as well, because if you're having, let's say, 30% more white space on your page because you are breaking up your paragraphs like so, and you have more dialogue on there and that sort of thing, then you're actually going to have readers feel like they're making progress a lot faster through your book because there's physically less words for them to read on that page. So they're actually going to get the sensation of turning pages a lot quicker. This is why if you look at thrillers, which are, you know, described as page-turning books, they actually literally design that approach into the formatting. They have lots of line spaces between text. They have very big text, often big margins, and it means that because there's not many words on the page, you're literally flipping through it really quickly. So you get this sense as a reader that you're making tons of progress. So I'm not saying here necessarily that you need to use dialogue or that you need to, you know, only have one sentence lines or whatever, but one sentence paragraphs rather, but you should be aware of the psychological impact that seeing big walls of text has on readers. And you should be very careful about deploying that. I think it's always good to be kind of generous, particularly in the first chapter, with giving lots of spaces, giving lots of white space on the page so that readers don't feel intimidated. Number three is describing things that didn't happen. This is a very, very common one. So let's say that I am in the perspective of Susan, and Susan is exploring this haunted house. Now let's say that I have the following line in my book. Susan didn't notice the monster creeping up behind her. Presuming we are in Susan's point of view, that sentence actually makes no sense. She cannot describe something that she is not noticing. Now, of course, if you have a narrator who is detached from this character more, if you have like a more godlike, omniscient narrator, then maybe you can get away with this sort of thing. But most of the time, if you're writing in third person, limited perspective, which is what I set this example up to be, then you should only be describing things through the filter of your character's senses. So if there are things that they cannot hear, see, taste, touch, or smell, then you shouldn't be able to describe them in your book. You can have them imagine other things out there, so you can have them imagining that there is a monster creeping up on them that they can't see, but you should be very careful about not describing things that can't actually be experienced through that character's perspective. And as a general point as well, you also want to kind of avoid describing things that haven't happened yet. So you don't want to describe how your character isn't throwing something at another character because that is not actually something that's happening. Rather, you can describe how they're really struggling to hold back their desire to hit this character or something like that. Show the struggle rather than showing the thing that hasn't happened as a way to characterize your character. So the second first chapter mistake that new fantasy writers make is no USP. So by USP here, I am talking about a term I've sort of stolen from marketing a little bit. In marketing, there is this idea of a unique selling proposition. It is, in other words, why someone would buy your product over something else. It's because it has a unique selling proposition. In story, I like to kind of translate that to a unique storytelling proposition. So in short, your unique storytelling proposition, or your USP, is the reason why someone would choose to read one of your books over the millions of other books out there. And that is because you have a different subject matter, or a different style, or a different approach to writing that makes you appealing for a specific type of reader. In other words, your USP is the answer to why someone wants to read your book over all the other options that exist out there. And the better that you can get at understanding and refining your USP, the better you're going to be at attracting readers who become genuine fans of your work and who find you to be one of their favorite authors. Now, of course, I should caveat this by saying it's not just about uniqueness. A book written without the letter E could be really unique, and that book actually does exist. It's called Gatsby. But just because it's really unique that might not actually mean that it's an interesting or a compelling read, that it has characters that captivate us, that it has a plot that keeps us hooked, that it has an interesting world that it explores. Remember, the goal of the first chapter in your fantasy story is simply to make readers care. One of you summed this up perfectly in a recent comment I saw. Show me early on that this person is worth caring about, and I will not only tolerate but actively enjoy the cliches. Sometimes the only thing separating a cliche from a good story is that you care enough about the outcome. Still, I think the gold standard to aim for is to have characters that you really care about and that you really make readers care about, and to also have a really refined and interesting USP. So, how do you actually create your USP? Well, in broad terms, you can define it as the unique combination of your voice and style, life experiences, thematic interests, and favored tropes. And I'm sure there are a ton of other things that go in there as well. So mixing and matching all these different things and tapping authentically into your own interests and hobbies and weirdness is how you arrive at your unique sense of voice as a writer. For example, let's take the common fantasy trope of a magical school or academy where the main character goes to train and learn about the magic. And as a quick sidebar here, because I've mentioned cliches before, a trope and a cliche are two different things. A trope is simply a storytelling device. A cliche is a storytelling device that has been overused or used in a poor manner. So a trope can become a cliche if you do it badly, or if you execute on the trope well, it is just simply a storytelling device. All stories have tropes. You know, so having a character reveal themselves as another character's father is a trope. And depending on how well you execute it, it will depend on whether it is just part of the story or whether it is cliche. Tropes can be either awesome or they can be boring. So back to our magical fantasy academy trope. If you approach that with this really lighthearted style where the focus is on the fun, on these characters bonding and forming friendships together and kind of getting up to wacky hijinks as they discover and learn more about this magic, then that is going to have a very different storytelling experience to the exact same setup of a magical academy. But let's say in this second setup, it's extremely dark. There's like human sacrifices going on in the dungeons and the characters are all at each other's throats and there's all these political machinations going on. Same subject matter, but the tone is going to be very different. Those two stories are going to attract vastly different readers and they have different USPs. The key point here, tying this back to your first chapter, really lean into the unique aspects of your story. And to do that, lean into your unique interests. Don't be a subpar copy of your favorite author. Forge your own pathway. Take inspiration, yes, from the stories that you love, but then remix it with your own life experiences and your own unique worldview and interests and innovate. And if you're thinking, Jed, that sounds like it's going to take a lot of time for me to get to that point, you're absolutely right. When you start out, you're probably going to be imitating your favorite authors. But over time, as you get more words out of your system, as you develop that muscle of being able to write stories, that's when you get to the point where your unique voice will begin to come through without any sort of conscious effort. It will just be something that begins to flow out of you, and hopefully you'll reach a point where readers start to think, oh, I can't wait to pick up this latest book by insert your name here, because it has insert your unique storytelling proposition. And when it comes to chapter one of your story, I think you should try to identify the USP of your story as a whole, and then figure out how you can give a little taste of that in chapter one to really get readers on board with the unique vision that you're going to be providing. First chapter mistake number three is starting too early. If you start us off on a regular day with your character with no real conflict or change, readers are going to get bored. Now, of course, as with all these points, there's nuance. If your character's regular mundane life is actually very interesting to us, then that could still be a compelling read. For example, if your character is this professional conman and their boring 9-to-5 everyday job is conning people, that could actually be quite interesting to follow along as a standard day in their life to see a slice of that character's regular experience. But that is only because a typical day for this person is more interesting than the average Joe. Generally speaking though, I find that most new writers are better off starting on the day that everything changes. This is a very good antidote to the common fantasy cliche of dumping readers with a ton of world building and exposition as soon as they get into the book, which can definitely turn readers off, particularly in the modern era. Instead, if you start on the day where everything changes, you can demonstrate your ability to create promises, progress, and payoff, earning the reader's trust and showing them that you actually have what it takes to take them along on an interesting story. So, start with the event that disrupts the character's ordinary world and drags her into the extraordinary world of your story. By doing this, you set the story in motion and you show readers the conflicts and the stakes that the character is up against. Now, this concept of starting on the day that everything changes is actually something I go into more detail in my free writing advice ebook, 5 Lessons That Transformed My Writing. It's a super short read covering some of the most impactful lessons I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. And you can join over 800 writers who have downloaded the book by going to jedhearn.com/lessons or by clicking the link in the description down below. First chapter mistake number 4 is meaningless action. A lot of fantasy writers are rightly scared about, you know, dumping a bunch of world building and exposition on readers straight away in chapter 1. So they think to themselves, okay, I need to have an engaging opening that isn't like all those other really, really old and boring fantasy books out there. What's engaging? What engages me as an audience member? Oh, I know. Movies that start with action are really engaging. They get me hooked straight away. Okay, so I'm just going to put a ton of action into the beginning of my book. But there's a few problems with that. A movie has tools that you don't as a novelist. A movie has visuals and it has sound. Now, that sounds really obvious, but it is a very key difference between the two mediums, because in a movie, you can have really cool fight choreography and stunt scenes and explosions and all of these other visual and auditory things to hook readers, and you don't actually need to dive that deep into the internal life of a character to create a really compelling and awesome movie. Although, of course, you can do that as well. But in a book, you don't have visuals and you don't have sound. So just describing one character chasing after another character along some rooftops is not going to be that interesting if you're just describing the actual mechanics and physics of that scene. But if you can make us understand why this chase is happening, why it's important to your character, how it makes your character feel, how they react in interesting and unique ways to the scenario that is unfurling around them as they chase this character across the rooftops of your fantasy city, then you can actually hook readers in a meaningful way with action. So that right there is the difference between boring action and meaningful action. Boring action thinks that the action itself is enough to hook readers. Meaningful action realizes that action is interesting to the extent that it reveals, develops, and explores character. So if you decide to include action in chapter 1 of your fantasy story, I strongly suggest considering the following questions. How does this action establish my character's personality, flaws, and character traits? For example, in chapter 1 of The Thunder Heist, my pirate fantasy book, it opens with my main character, Kef, about to be executed on board this prison ship. Unlike the other characters who are about to be killed, Kef seems really unworried, and she's just joking flippantly around with the guards. When the judge reads off her very extensive list of crimes, Kef just kind of says, "Not bad, you got about half of them." So we get this sense of Kef being this really cocky, incredibly competent master pirate with a reckless streak a mile wide. The second question is, how does this action build sympathy and reader connection to my character? So in The Thunder Heist, Kef is immediately positioned as an underdog. She's a prisoner, there's all these guards around her, she's about to be executed. But then despite that, her sort of joking response to the situation builds sympathy and connection with the reader. And then lastly, how does this action kick off the plot? It can be totally okay to just have a really cool throwaway action set piece at the beginning of your story that never really goes anywhere or links into your wider narrative. For example, the beginning of Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark has a really cool self-contained Indiana Jones story about him trying to steal this idol from Temple that doesn't really relate to the rest of the story, even though you have some characters who pop up later on. But because it establishes Indiana Jones's character so well and it builds so much empathy for him, it just works. However, if you can find a way to link your opening action to the rest of your story, if it can kind of kick off the events of your narrative and set your story in motion, it's probably going to be a lot more stronger and a lot more compelling. For example, in The Thunder Heist, we learned that Kef only allowed herself to be captured and set here for this execution so that she could free a fellow prisoner who she needed something from. And then this leads to a very creative way that she manages to escape her execution in what I think is probably the best opening scene out of the 3 novels I've published so far. First chapter mistake number 5 is false promises. Stories have a fundamentally 3-part pattern: promise, progress, and payoff. This promise, progress, payoff structure is present at every level of your book, all the way from the micro level of each scene, all the way up to the macro level of the overall structure from beginning to end. Now, in the first chapter of your fantasy novel, you're really training readers on how to read your story. You're giving them promises, you're establishing expectations, and your job as a writer is to be in control of the promises that you are establishing and creating in your opening. From what I see, there's 3 main ways that fantasy writers stuff up the promises in the opening chapter of their book. Number 1 is getting us invested in the wrong character. So fantasy authors, I think, are particularly susceptible to prologues that feature characters that are not the main character of your book. And that can work, but the problem is that the very first point of view character the reader meets is going to be the one that they assume is the main character of the book. Readers are very attaching like that. They will just sort of latch on to the first character that is mentioned and sort of assume they are the main character, and it can be difficult to overcome that later on. Now, of course, you can get around this. The opening to a Game of Thrones begins with a prologue that has a character who does not appear in the rest of the book, and that is because that character dies at the very end of that prologue. So when you actually kill off your prologue character like this, that is a really easy way to signal, hey, what you just saw there, that was like a cold open, it's with a character that is not a major part of the book. Now let's move move on to the story. But having said that, I think it's generally good practice when you can figure out a way to do it to be starting with your main character, because if your main character is not interesting enough to merit the beginning of the book following them, then maybe that's actually a sign that the main character needs a little bit of work done. And of course, as of this point, as with everything else, it is very execution dependent. Like I mentioned, Game of Thrones throws this rule out the window because it does it well. It manages to execute on having a character begin the book who is not a main character. So this is not a deal breaker by any means. Having said that, I think most new fantasy writers are probably going to be better served by starting the book with the main character. Promise mistake number two is creating the wrong tone and emotion. So again, the first chapter is training readers on what to expect from the rest of your story. So it's very important to be mindful of the wider tone and sort of emotional valence of your narrative, and then to make sure the first chapter is roughly consistent with that. So if you have a super dark, super gritty first chapter where everyone in the main character's family is like brutally slaughtered, and then the rest of the book is just like this very fluffy, lighthearted romance, you know, that might create a little bit of jarring disconnect with readers, because the readers who are there for the fluffy romance were probably turned away by the really brutal first chapter, and the readers who are there for the brutal first chapter probably weren't wanting that really fluffy, lighthearted romance afterwards. And then mistake number three is not foreshadowing or setting up the main conflict. So if you establish in your first chapter that your main character lives in this little fantasy village and it's on the border with this rival nation, and this rival nation is building up their army, they're building up their forces, they're going to invade, but then your main character is sort of whisked away and they go to like a bakery in the main city of this country, and the rest of the story just deals with them trying to set up this bakery and trying to keep it open and trying to grow its customer base and that sort of thing, and there's never again any mention or relevance of that neighboring country that's threatening to invade, again, there's going to be this disconnect with readers where they're like, you were promising that we would face this other country over here, that this invading country is a pivotal part of the story and of the narrative, but then we never saw any of that. So you've got to make sure that your promises and your progress and your payoff are all aligning in a seamless way. And a really great solution to this mistake and the two others I mentioned before is to think of your first chapter as your story in miniature. So look at the overall shape of your story, try to figure out how you can sort of encapsulate what's going on there. You know, is this a story about a character trying to get revenge for something that was done to them in their past? Is this a story about a character learning a magical ability or, you know, growing and developing their skills? And then figure out how you can kind of create a short story version of that that captures your story in miniature in the first chapter. So if your overall story is about your character rising from being really bad at this magic to mastering it and becoming like this absolute weapon, then maybe the first chapter can show them trying to master a smaller skill or something like that. Basically, the idea here is try to give readers a sense of the emotional experience and progression that they're going to have in the whole book in your first chapter. And then the last first chapter mistake in this video is world building overload. To put this really simply, we don't need to understand everything about your world at once. You don't need to convey all the details in chapter one. Even in something like the very first Lord of the Rings book, The Fellowship of the Ring, and Lord of the Rings often held up as an example of something with extremely extensive and detailed world building. The prologue actually starts relatively small scale. Like, yes, Tolkien dumps a bunch of information on us. There's not really that much sort of narrative drive to the prologue. It is pretty much just a history lesson, but it is a history lesson confined to hobbits, the history of them, how they kind of came to the Shire where they live today. And it is relatively self-contained and focused on just this one aspect of his world. And then it's only later on that we learn more about the wider history of Middle-earth as the characters set off on their quest across the country. The key point here is that it can be a really good idea to just take one aspect of the very interesting world that you have created and just focus on that in your opening. Another example here is I've just recently started reading The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin. I'm a few chapters into it at the moment, and she does a really great job in her prologue of exploring this fantasy world that is ravaged by earthquakes and exploring the sort of mythos behind that and these magical creatures or users, I'm not actually too sure yet at this stage in the narrative, who have control over this sort of earthquake magic. And I get the sense that there's so much more to explore and there's so many more details in this world that lie ahead of me, but I feel really hooked just because of the very detailed and compelling and interesting way that this one small, tiny aspect of her world was explored in the opening.